This guy is so starless. Baby, this guy is so starless. Baby, you got me growing heartless. So heartless, girl, it's starless. Starless, yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, we back, man. Red Light Special. What episode is this, Chris? Episode
5.
Episode number 5, man. Shout out to Jake and Papa for our intro, for our theme music. That song is called Starless. I feel like a lot of people hit us up on Twitter and is like, yo, what's that song that y'all play at the beginning? That is Jake and Papa, and the song is called Starless. And if you never heard it anywhere else, it's because it's exclusive to us, to the Red Light Special. They let us get that for our theme music, so shout out to them. And they just put out a new record on This Is R&B, right, Chris?
Beat in the Trunk.
Beat in the Trunk by Jake and Papa. So go to thisisrnb.com. And check out the new single from Jake and Papa, Beat in the Trunk. But we are back. We had a hell of an episode last week with Eric Bellinger, didn't we?
Yes. Last week was, man, I got to say, Eric was a blessing to have on this podcast. He came through and just shared so many stories. And, you know, whether it was about writing or song making or his own album that's coming out, you know, Cuffing Season, look out for it either July 7th or July 10th. It was just great. And the audience, you know, our listeners have been absolutely supportive and great about the podcast episode. They've been writing to us. They've been listening to Choose Up Season. They've been listening to everything that he has out now up until his album comes out next month. So,
yeah, now next month in a couple of days. I feel like we're just about in July right now.
Just about.
Yeah, so Choose Up Season is the mixtape that Eric Bellinger put out. So we've been bumping that. Like, please check that out. And then Cuffing Season is the album. I feel like, you know, as this show grows, that's been our most successful episodes. I mean, the streams on that have been amazing. But even more so than just the streams or numbers or metrics, the comments, the way the people hit us back has been crazy. And you know, that's what it's all about, man. Like, actually talking about music to the people that make music. So when you come to the Red Light Special, I mean, we ain't going to press you about who you fucking, who you got beef with. You know, we're going to talk to you about your album, man, and track 1 through 12 or whatever, and we're going to break down and talk about the music. So with that being said, you know, we got another dope episode lined up this week, don't we?
Dope? I don't think that really explains it. I don't think that's the word for this episode. I'm really excited for this episode. We're not going to say who we have just yet, but...
Okay. But let's talk about a few things. There's a few things that's happened the past week that since we last left y'all. First of all, the BET Awards. You know, a lot of people call it the EBT Awards. And I never understood why, because I really, really think BET, first of all, it's not easy to put on an awards show. You know, and I think BET does a good job. I think this year was like the best that I could remember in previous years. BET really killed it this year. What did you think of the show this year, Chris?
I thought the same. I thought, you know, even in previous years myself, I'm guilty of thinking that BET could do a lot better at the presentation of artists and, you know, the award show in general. But this year was definitely, I don't think there was anything that really stood out to me as that I didn't like. I thought it was well put together. I liked all the performances, and they did, you know, a couple tributes that I absolutely loved. And, you know, I really can't complain.
Yeah, I mean,
they really upped themselves.
We got a Smokey Robinson tribute. Like, damn, to see Smokey Robinson up there.
Looks like he hasn't aged.
Yeah, well, you know, he also probably did something to reverse that clock. But but we can't talk bad about Smokey. My mom's a smack me. But nah, Smokey, I mean, looking great, sounded great. And those records, you just forget the impact that this brother had on everything that we do today. Then there was the big Janet Jackson tribute with Tinashe. Oh my gosh, she looked amazing.
She's really, I like Tinashe for one reason specifically. She not only sings, but she does a lot of dancing. And artists don't do that anymore, especially R&B artists. We forget that R&B artists, they are the kings and queens of singing and dancing, you know, bringing both to the table, where we don't really get that anymore. And people, I think, kind of put that past her, but she did an incredible job on that stage.
Right. And you know, speaking of singing and dancing, the homie Chris Brown did his thing, man. Everybody who knows me knows, like, I'm a big fan of Chris Brown. You see the headlines, like, dude is definitely a train wreck. And we see it play out, you know, on TMZ or wherever. Or, you know, sometimes on his own Instagram. But I mean, when he get on that stage, it's kind of hard to deny what this kid has going on with the singing and dancing. Like, he really puts on the show. He performed Liquor, which was his new single. It's cool. I'm waiting to hear more from him, though. And then he did Ayo with Tiger. My only disappointment about Chris Brown's performance was he did Post to Be with Omarion. Him and Omarion did Post to Be.
And without your boo.
There was no Jhené Aiko. I was waiting to hear Jhené, you know, sing the line, the lyric of the year, Might Let Your Boy Show For Me. But he got to eat the booty like groceries, and Jhené wasn't there. She was at the Wildest Festival in the UK. So I'm still waiting. We didn't get to see them perform at Summer Jam. Jhené wasn't at Summer Jam.
Right.
I'm still trying to see the Post to Be performance with all three of them.
Maybe
so
third time will
this.
Be a charm. Who knows?
I hope so, man.
Hopefully.
And then The Weeknd, yo. The Weeknd is bugged out. So The Weeknd performs with Alicia Keys, which was dope, right? And then he won an award, and they were like, well, The Weeknd isn't here to accept this award. The homie just left. He said, yo, I'm going to do my performance, and I'm out. Yo, I fucks with The Weeknd for this very reason, man.
The Weeknd doesn't show face too often, and I think people are also forgetting that he is showing face a little bit more now than he ever has. You know, he never did interviews. He never did appearances. He did the 50 Shades movie, and he started going to the screenings, the premieres. And he started doing a little bit more of media. And, you know, he came out and performed for BET Awards. I mean, you have The Weeknd performing on the BET Awards. Right. I think that's huge in itself. You know, so what? Maybe he, you know, had somewhere to go and scattered for the, you know, the award. But
he likes to be mysterious. But nah, he's dope. And actually, it's amazing the moment that he's having now, because dude was so kind of underground. When you look at the trilogy with House of Balloons and Thursday and Echoes of Silence, like those were so... The subject matter, first of all, was very adult and dangerous and drug and risque. And now, like, he's doing, like, Good Morning America. And, you know, he has the song Deserve It. Yeah, right. And Can't Feel My Face, which kind of reminds me a little bit of Michael. Like, he's in his Michael Jackson bag right now. And it's dope to see the evolution of The Weeknd. He's doing songs with Ariana Grande. Like, dude is turning from an underground thing to a legit pop star. So,
right.
He's going to have to give an interview soon. He's going to have to accept an award eventually. Who knows? Maybe he'll come on this podcast. Abel, holla at me, man. Let's do it, man. That's dope. Yo, and we got a special guest. I want to shout out one person that's in the room with us right now, too. He's going to get real mad at me, but my boy Lou, man. What up, man?
What's up, Rob?
Yo.
Let him get mad.
Yeah, he's going to get mad. Listen, my man Lou, we grew up together. You hear me talk about him all the time. This
all
has been my brother, my best friend since kindergarten. And we came up together, so he's seen it all. And you know, I don't think there was a whole lot of options coming from the neighborhood where we grew up in. And, you know, we're proud of him. He's a sergeant in the Army. Did I get that right?
Sergeant First Class.
Sergeant First Class. Listen.
To be specific.
You got to forgive me, bro. Like... When I was growing up, the only sergeant I knew was Sergeant Slaughter. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I have Sergeant Slaughter, I have my man Lou. And he just came to kick it with us. He's actually going to be deployed and going to Kuwait very soon. And I'm just like, yo, one, dude, I just want to, like, salute you for that. You do one for being my friend, and you just give great service to this country. So I know it's a little – we deviate a little bit from – I don't know if there's an R&B song that, you know, expresses that, man, but I just want to have you up here and say what's up. That's all.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Rob. You know, I love what I do, man.
Right.
I love what I do.
What you listening to now, man? What you bumping when you out there?
Honestly, man, a little of everything, Rob. A little of everything. We don't get the radio stations like you get them here in New York, so anytime we could hear any good music, you know, I hear you talking about The Weeknd, they play a lot of that, you know, it's always fun to listen to.
You appreciate everything.
I yeah. really do.
Lou is Dominican, so his iPod is full of Romeo Santos. Okay. And he just went to a Mark Anthony concert about a month ago.
That's right.
If he's serious, I'm jealous because I love Mark Anthony.
He's very serious.
Wow. Right?
Nah, so we here. Nah, man. So he's gonna be joining us this week, man. So feel free to just chime in, man. Like, we just have a good time up here, man, and I'm happy to have you. BET Awards was one thing. Other big news this week, we got some new album releases. First of all, shout out to the internet. The internet just released an album. I haven't heard it yet, but you heard the internet?
Ego Death, yeah. Girl is one of my favorites. They released the video before releasing the album, which the video is also... They're just so big on visuals. And Girl is an amazing song. Some of the other songs they have on the album. I haven't heard the full album yet, but what I have heard, I like. And I'm just excited to hear more.
Okay, yes. And hopefully we'll have the internet up here, too, I think. Their music is dope. I think Sid is amazing. Matt Marsh is amazing. And they just bring something different to the table. So we're here for that. And Miguel dropped his new one.
Wild Heart.
So we talked about it a little bit this week because it was streaming on NPR. But the album is out now. And Chris has not been able to stop listening to it. Chris, what's up with this album, man? Give us the breakdown.
I love Wild Heart for so many reasons. But Miguel... he's definitely taking a new lane with this one. You know, we obviously had Kaleidoscope Dream, which did extremely well. And everybody kind of got like that lustful Miguel that we all know. But this one is a little bit more, it's a little bit more trendy, alternative. It's just so much guitar on this album. You have a track that actually has Lenny Kravitz, who is the genius of that.
Oh, Zoe's Pops?
Yes.
Hey, Zoe.
Anyways.
Don't slip. Zoe's doing
shout
thing
out
right
to
now.
Zoe but Lenny Kravitz, yeah. I mean, if you know anything about him, so I was excited to hear that track and it didn't disappoint. But there is one thing that I'm disappointed with on this album.
Okay.
Destinado a Morir.
Okay.
First of all, the whole track is in Spanish, the track title. I can barely recite anything that he said on that track that was in Spanish. It was mainly all in English. I think the chorus just says Destinado a Morir, babe. Like, there isn't much. I was hoping to get a Spanish song. I mean, I have never heard, you know, Miguel is half Mexican, half black. And I was hoping to really get a full-fledged Spanish record on this album, but it didn't happen. So that was my only disappointment.
You want a full-fledged Spanish record?
Yes, I do.
By the Romeo Santos album. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
We have too much of that. I was hoping to get a new side of Miguel, you know?
Yeah, man. Nah. The album is dope. I mean, with Miguel, you're always going to get quality. Like, he's definitely pushing the envelope again. Because I felt like, even from the first album, All I Want Is You, then the Kaleidoscope Dream, he definitely, like, just pushed the envelope of what R&B, quote-unquote, is. You know what I'm saying? And you can't even just put him in a box anymore and just... say he's an R&B artist. Like, I mean, it's all just music at the end of the day. But, I mean, maybe Wild Heart has taken a little while to grow on me while it's a dope album. Like, I definitely like the NWA joint. I like Waves. I really like What's Normal Anyway because he talks about being biracial and the difficulty in being black and Mexican and having to fit in and, you know, his faith and stuff like that. So those are things that I could kind of relate to. But I don't know if I like this as much as I like Kaleidoscope Dream. And I know y'all going to kill me on Twitter and talk all types of bad about me. But that last Miguel album is hard to beat. I don't know if I'm going to live with this one as long, man. Like,
and I think that goes back to what I said in the last episode when we had Eric Bellinger here, where, you know, you had asked me if I think it's going to live up to the hype that it has so far. And I told you it's different. And people don't know how to accept different nowadays. So either they're going to love it or it's going to fly right by them. And I think you're one of those people that it's going to fly right by. But I think you'll grow to like it with time.
Right. I don't think it's going to fly. I don't think it'll fly right by me. But Kaleidoscope Dream, like, we're going to be listening to, like, you know how long people going to be making love to Adorn? Like, I know there's kids right now. There's probably little girls being born just right now, a couple months ago, named Adorn.
You know how many people are going to be born to In the Valley, though?
I don't know. Well, In the Valley is, if y'all heard it, In the Valley is kind of about making porn, right? He's like, let's do it like they do it in the Valley. And we know in the Valley they make, it's where
a lot of porn
is being produced. I don't know what the hell y'all going to name y'all kids if y'all doing it like y'all do it in the Valley, man. Y'all, you know. That ain't, you know.
Times have changed, Rob. I don't know if you forgot that.
Listen, I'm on my old head shit. Lou, you listen to Miguel?
I listen to Miguel.
Okay, what's your favorite Miguel song?
Adorn.
Oh, see?
He just said that because he's friends with Rob.
I had the opportunity to see him in concert down in San Antonio.
Okay.
Yeah. Word. So that was it was a dope show.
Right. Yeah. Nah, he's a dope dude, a very nice guy, a dope artist. Wild Heart, I mean, I suggest you go pick it up, but, you know, I just don't know, for me, that's going to top Kaleidoscope Dream. I mean, listen, Kaleidoscope Dreams is one of the strongest R&B albums in forever. You know, actually, I want to shout out Joe Budden, because I was on his show. I'll name this podcast later. Shout out to Joe Budden for the support, and Marissa and Rory and Deani. So Joe is doing this thing, this R&B bracket, where they're picking 64 albums, right? 64 R&B albums. And they're putting it in the NCAA bracket style. Philly the Boss is helping them. And they're going to try to whittle this down to get the greatest R&B album from 1990 to modern day.
So that episode was just to more or less go over them, and then they were going to do that afterwards? I thought that's what they did during the episode.
Yeah, no, it was weird. Because, first of all, they asked me to come on the episode the day before we recorded it. And they just sent me a list of just R&B albums. And it was like 100 R&B albums. It's like, pick anything that you don't think is missing. So it wasn't a lot of prep time. But, you know, we chose the number one seeds, and they're still working it out. So they're still trying to figure out what albums go and where they're being seated. I brought that up because Kaleidoscope Dream is definitely within that playing field of 64.
Absolutely.
I think one of the biggest arguments we had, and we've been having it on Twitter all week, is My Life, I said, is a one seed. Definitely Mary J. Blige, My Life.
Miseducation.
And then Miseducation of Lauryn Hill came up, and that was a one seed. And we kind of was arguing about which album was better. And first of all, both albums are fucking great albums, the classic albums, My Life and Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. But if I had to pick one, I'm going with Mary J. Blige, man.
See, I think that's where I got to disagree with you.
Why?
I don't know if I'm just a Hill fanatic or, you know, but I think Miseducation is just, it's better to me. I think it's something that I would still listen to more now than I would Mary J. Blige, My Life.
I'm not going to argue preference, right? But, I mean, Mary with that album, first of all, Lauryn Hill grabbed Mary J. Blige to be on Miseducation.
And?
Mary ain't grabbed Lauren to be on My Life, right? So, but, you know, I just think that Mary J. Blige is,
but
like...
But she worked on one of her albums.
Yeah, after. It was like, all right, now you got to return the favor.
So now we're talking about when?
Come on, man. This is amazing. Like, Mary is like... Lauren ain't got a la di da da. She need one of those.
No, but Lauren got an X factor. Lauren got a everything is everything.
Listen, Mary J.
Lauren
Blige
got a doo wop.
Mary J. Blige has My Life. She has I'm Going Down. She has I Love You. Come on, man.
I'm not knocking it. I love these records. When this comes on.
Come on. And this ain't even the one with Smith and Wesson on it. This is just a. No, man. But, you know, we'll see. That'll be decided when Joe and I'll name this podcast later and the whole crew over there fill out their brackets and you guys will be able to vote on the greatest albums. I know My Life is up there. I know Miseducation is up there. I know Usher's Confessions is up there. R. Kelly's 12 Play is up there. There's a Boyz II Men album. I think Boyz II Men 2 is up there. So... You guys, it's going to be fun. It's going to be like a month where we'll be voting, and it'll be some great stuff. So shout out to those guys over there because they've been very supportive of what we do over here at Red Light Special, and we'll support them the same.
Absolutely. I'll be excited to see what that final list comes out to.
Yeah, man. Listen, it got to be My Life or Confessions. If I'm voting now, My Life or Usher's Confessions. Greatest R&B album of all time.
Confessions was a great album.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Listen.
Phenomenal.
Some people live that out.
Well, you know what? I think that's where the best music comes from. You know, these are artists that are not afraid to be honest.
Right.
They're not afraid to touch on subjects that they've actually lived out and experiences that, you know, might hurt a few people for them to come out and admit. But that's where you get the most realest, deepest music from and that fans and listeners can actually relate to. And that's something that's going to last a long time.
Right.
That's timeless music right there.
For sure. So... we'll see how that plays out. But speaking of timeless music, right? Our guest this week has had his hand in creating some timeless music. And I wanted to have him up here. He's a good friend of mine. This guy's a Bronx, New York native. You know, started out as a rapper. He was signed to Motown and put out a record on Motown. And, you know, but has been very instrumental behind the scenes. So somewhere along the lines, and he'll be able to tell his story, but somewhere along the lines, he hooks up with cats like Commissioner Gordon and Jerry West. Mm. And then links up with Tone and Polk of the Trackmasters. And somewhere along the lines, these guys, this group of individuals together changed the way that R&B music sounds in the modern day era. I mean, you know, there was a time when, right now, like we're used to hearing rappers on records or somebody sing a sweet melody over a hip hop beat and Peace the President or something like that, right?
Right.
There was a time when it was separate, when you couldn't have a rap on your record. And if you did, the radio wouldn't play that version. They might only play it at night. But, you know, so this guy has worked with the Trackmasters, and together they've worked with Mariah Carey and really kind of helped her transformations from, like, Vision of Love to when you get to, like, Heartbreaker and Honey and the more hip, cool Mariah Carey. Mary J. Blige, R. Kelly, Destiny's Child, Jennifer Lopez, Michael Jackson. You know, now he has a show that he has called the A&R Room, and he'll speak more about it. But I just want to welcome, man, and thank my brother for being here. Rich Nice, man. What up?
What's good,
what's up,
man?
Rich
Nice.
How's it going? I was having a hard time not even commenting while y'all was talking about all those records. I was like, let me not say anything. I can't talk yet.
Right.
That's
funny. Well, you could comment now.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask you. I was holding my tongue on that, but between My Life and Miseducation, I'm sorry, I got to get back to that.
Well,
which one do you prefer?
You know, oddly enough, I was in the studio while both of those records were recorded.
Hmm.
I was fortunate to be in the studio while both of those records were being recorded. You know, it's a little difficult for me because I still view Lauryn Hill more as an MC than as a singer. I feel like she's an MC that can sing very well.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to a singer that can rap well. You know, so I never really would have pit their albums against each other for R&B. You know, I'd have been
right.
Like, you know, maybe some singles. Like, oh, this is a great R&B single against one of Mary's R&B singles. But as an album, I wouldn't have done it. But yes. If it's in a competition.
That's a great point.
Oh, it's really difficult for me. I guess it's stuck in my brain. I mean. I'm gonna get in trouble if I answer this.
I wish you guys could see the faces
first
that
all,
he's making
first
right
of all,
now.
wait, which album do you guys have production credit on?
Right.
On the Mary J. Blige album, of course. However, I was in the studio for the Lauryn Hill record, and even though I didn't personally produce anything, I felt like my energy contributed because I heard a lot of early. I have dats of. Oh, I shouldn't say that.
We have to explain. We have to explain what dats are. Digital audio tapes.
Digital audio tapes.
Before Pro Tools.
Yes, we used to record all of our mixes down to a digital audio tape. It's a 2-track recording tape, and we would put all our mixes to it. And working at Columbia at the time, you know, I was an A&R executive at Columbia, so I was very privy to hearing a lot of early music. Commissioner Gordon and I worked on records from teenage years. We came up in the business together. So
right.
We, oddly enough, ended up at Sony in two different realms. Like, we didn't even plan on being there at the same time and ended up there. And so he would help me with my records. I would help him with his records. He'd play me some Lauryn records and say, what do you think of this? And what do you think of that? And I'm like, ooh, you know. And we would kind of really, as a team, as a department, kind of make sure the records were good.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm torn. Today I'll say Mary J. Blige, but then tomorrow I may say Lauryn. But right now, I gotta say Mary J. Blige. That My Life album was psycho.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah, no, it was.
I got that $20 for you too.
I'm down to $20. That's it.
Rob is just in here pulling strings.
But on that list, they better be like a Blackstreet record in that list, because it's like
a Blackstreet album. Did Blackstreet have
album.
A quintessential? Well, it would be What was it? Blackstreet, I think, it was the self-titled one that was with No Diggity. You know what it is? No Diggity, I guess because it was so pop, because there were other dope moments that you bring me joy.
Yeah, great.
Before
R&B
I let you go, can I get a
that.
Kiss goodnight?
Yeah.
And No Diggity wasn't kind of the R&B. Like, No Diggity annoys me now when I
now,
still hear that
but
record.
Then it was a great record. Even the Jodeci record. There better be a Jodeci record in that list.
Jodeci record. Diary of a Madman made that list. You know, it's the same way when people talk about Cisco, what was it? Unleash the Dragon, or yeah. What's the first album? They'd be like, man, that's a really great R&B album. I was like, bro, I can't get past the Thong Song, man. That's just so fucking silly in 2015.
You're too stuck on the mainstream that came out of
it. You know, when you have a big single that, because, you know, I'm talking about albums like Mary J. Blige, My Life, Confessions, were like albums like front to back. Like even the songs that weren't singles,
you could play them.
Like yeah. You could play them. And I'm not saying Blackstreet doesn't have that, but when you have a single that's so overpowering, sometimes it's hard to look past that. So after that conversation with Budden, I had to go revisit the Cisco album.
Right.
But I was never really a huge Drew Hill fan.
Neither was I.
I never forgave Drew Hill for when Tell Me came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like you got to imagine this. This is before social media. This is before YouTube. So you would hear the song, and then you had to wait 3 months for the video,
yeah.
Right? And that's if you had cable, you know?
or video music box,
so the box. So for a good month, I remember Hot 97 playing Tell Me, and I thought it was the new Jodeci record.
Yeah.
They even bit Jodeci's ad-libs, because they, and you know. Mm. And then I seen the video, and I'm like, that ain't Casey. Why are they hopping around? And Drew Hill is dope, but right. I kind of never forgave. You know, they say the first impression
means everything.
And I was like, I even think like Jodeci might have tried to diss. You know,
it was.
I felt like they had
a
skit when they was like, "Yo, we heard the new Jodeci record." They was like, "Ain't no new Jodeci record." Like,
yeah, that was horrible.
So I always had it was always harder for me to get into Drew Hill. But let's get into Rich Nice, man, because you're a hip hop dude. Like first and foremost, like a B-boy, like, and from that era. But, and because this is mainly an R&B podcast, an R&B show, do you ever consider the contributions that you've made to the world of R&B and how, with the Trackmasters, you actually helped change the course of R&B music?
Well, you know, it's funny. We talk about this all the time uptown. Any real hip-hop head is an R&B lover. Right. You can't be a real hip-hop head and not an R&B lover. It's impossible. It's impossible. There's too many grooves. There's too many breaks. There's too many moments from R&B music historically that help make hip-hop. I mean, the very first one, Chic and Rapper's Delight, mm-hmm. was, you know what I mean? Like, you can't take, without Good Times, which is an R&B record, like, that's the one. That's the one in the park that you threw on and people got busy.
But still in the 80s, right? I think there was a rough patch of... Because they did go hand-in-hand, hip-hop and R&B, but when producers and artists were trying to blend them together, it didn't always work so well.
Oh,
like track, what was the R&B record on Long Live the Kane? That wasn't great.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, Rakim had an R&B record. Like, it didn't feel like... Really the pioneer, like, and when Puff says it, Puff gets a lot of credit because Puff came out and said, well, we invented the remix. And Puff gets his credit. Really, DJ Ron G, with his blend tapes,
yeah,
kind of set the blueprint. But I think Trackmasters, when you talk about blending hip-hop and R&B, Ron G, I think, was the godfather.
Well, there's a guy, actually, funny enough, how they say, on the other side of town was a kid named Flash. On the other side of town was this guy named Fat Doug, where he was signed to Uptown. And a lot of people used to take his tapes and mimic what he did. He was before Ron G. And Fat Doug produced Come and Talk to Me with the Jodeci, with the EPMD loop under it. That's him actually rapping on it. And Puff had him change his verse to fit for Jodeci. He never got any production credit.
Wow.
But he got a little bit of writer's credit, but no real production credit. But Fat Doug was a guy, he's a real B-boy guy, hip-hop dude. He would make a tape, and his one tape that he would make, you would listen to this one tape for the whole summer.
Right.
Like, his tapes were that banging. Like, and he would do this upscale mixes. Like, one time he mixed Feeling Hot, Hot, Hot with, like Warm It Up Kane or something crazy like that. And it was just like, how are these two songs even blending? And why do I care?
Right.
But you'd be riding around New York going crazy to these mixes. And he made these incredible blends that people all gravitated to, and everybody had a Fat Doug tape. They might not admit it, but a lot of cats had Fat Doug. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Ron G. Right. Ron G did his thing.
Right.
But Fat Doug was a little before Ron G and had these blends. Puff, ask Puff about it. Next time you speak to Puff, ask him about Fat Doug. Watch his entire face change. You're like, what you know about Fat Doug?
Next time I speak to Puff.
Rob's going
to
put that right in his pocket.
I know you got him on speed dial. You and him hot all the time. Brunch on Saturdays.
Might be a couple of emails between me and Puff.
Yeah, you know.
Shout out to Ramon Dukes, man. You know. Big brother.
But something that we did at the time when we were making these records was we wanted to make the rap and the R&B kind of blend hand in hand. Because that's the kind of rappers that we were. I was that kind of rapper. Tone was that type of rapper.
Red Hot Lover Tone, who is Tone from Trackmasters.
Right. Hev was that type of rapper. And we all kind of had that kind of synergy that we made these type of records. And when it came time to flip it for the R&B, people was like, well, if we can do it to kind of expand our audience, because back then, hip-hop records didn't play on mainstream radio
at all,
without any singing on it. If you didn't have any singing on your chorus, you wasn't getting on daytime radio.
Let's talk about New York for a second and just set the stage. If you're talking about New York, I mean, this is an era where Hot 97 didn't exist or was just coming to exist. Hot 97 was a dance station that played freestyle music, and it was almost like KTU. If you live in New York, it was the dance station. Kiss FM was the urban station, but it was adult contemporary. It was R&B.
Yep.
They'll play the R&B records, and then you'll get a couple of hours of Red Alert at night. Where he were really going on the rap records.
On the weekend.
Right. Maybe you'll get, like, and what you're saying is maybe Heavy D could get played, because Heavy D's records was always super melodic. But you wasn't getting Wu-Tang Cream.
No.
The first time I heard Wu-Tang Cream was maybe 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Red Alert played it. It wasn't, like, daytime radio.
Absolute no daytime.
So, it really, the way we see R&B and hip-hop now, it was really two separate worlds. It was like distant cousins. And even the fact where you would listen to take Illmatic, for example. There's not an R&B feature on there. And it wasn't uncommon. Actually, something was wrong with you. People would look at you funny if you had that one R&B feature on your album. If we're talking about 89, 90, 91, 92, 93. Rap was rap and R&B was R&B. And nobody could quite figure out how to blend it on a commercial level. But Trackmasters, Rich Nice, Trackmasters, Tony Polk cracked the code.
I mean, it was funny because we really just kind of did what we felt. I think that's the one reason why, you know, even with Puff saying they invented the remix, it's like, I don't know. You know what I mean? We did a lot of remixes for Bad Boy that people don't even know that in the beginning, because Trackmasters, there was two Trackmasters. There was an old Trackmasters that was spelled TRAKMASTERZ. Which was Frank Nitti, Alex Richburg, who was an engineer, bass player, Polk and Tone. And at this time, I was a rapper on Motown. Tone, this is like, I'm talking about 1990, Chuck Rock jumps up on the scene with a dream and a hardcore, you know, like that time. And we were trying to figure out how we were going to work together. So I would take the train every day out to Brooklyn. And it was weird because the old Trackmasters were very hip-hop. It was just like hip-hop, 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 an occasional reggae record.
Well, they did Ill Street Blues, right?
Ill Street Blues.
With Coogi Rap. So these are hardcore rap records.
Hardcore rap records. I got a story about that. I'll tell you in a minute. So it was just a little difficult when it came time to do R&B because there wasn't a cohesive thought. It was just kind of like, we do this hip-hop and that's what it is. And then that fell apart and it was done. It was like Richburg went his way. Frank, I think, moved to California. And there was no more Trackmasters. But at this time, I'm already kind of embedded in the crew. Like, we're around. It's like, I'm almost like, what's my man name? That was like the fifth Beatle.
I was going to say Jerobe because I'm thinking Child Called Quest.
Preston, I see his face too, an old school organ guy. And he helped the Beatles a lot with their musical arrangements. And because Tone and I, that was like my partner. Me and him ran the streets of New York and ran around. I would always be around them. So finally, when the crew broke up, it was like, well, we need to keep making records. So I'm producing on one side of town by myself. Polk is producing by himself, and Tone is producing by himself. But we all show up at each other's sessions, helping each other with the records. But it's like Polk's company, I think, was 12 and Under, and Tone's company, I think, was Slam You Well, and my company was Nice Time Entertainment. And it's just like, we're doing a lot of records, but we can't really put no points on the board because it's just my company, your company, your company.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that brought you guys together, like one specific song or project mm-hmm. that kind of binded you guys?
That's an excellent question.
I mean, you know, it's funny. It was a ton of them. We worked on a lot of records together, but it was just more behind the scenes. Like, yo, I need some help with this record. Come by the studio. And Tone would come and help me. Or Polk would say, yo, Rich, what you doing? I need some help with this record. And I go by the studio and help him. But we were still our individual companies, you know. And then it came a point where it was like, why are we chasing our tail? We need to put everything in one pot, one company, because we're working together anyway, and let's just make it. And then they was like, well, what are we going to call it? And I said, let's just call it Trackmasters. Let's go back to Trackmasters, but we'll spell it different. We'll make it, you know. Polk went home and Polk did the Trackmaster logo. Polk drew the Trackmaster logo. Tone and Steve Stout were friends.
Right.
Because Steve was managing a rapper on RCA, Bass Blaster. A white rapper, oddly enough. Let me tell you why I say that. Because what happened was, later on, we had a chance to sign Eminem, and we actually passed on him because we were so engulfed in the Nas project.
Get out.
Yeah.
I mean, get out.
No, but it wasn't the same Eminem. It wasn't the same records. It wasn't, you know, but he could rap. Music. No, I didn't think he couldn't rap. I knew he was amazing as a rapper, but he wasn't ready like that, you know. And the joke was, Steve, why weren't you managing him instead of Bass Blaster?
You know
what I mean? That was the joke.
I'm actually glad you didn't pick up Eminem, because we probably wouldn't even answer the phone for me at this point. We wouldn't have you here today.
That's not true. You're still my homie. So long story short, we formed Trackmasters, and we basically, there was a rule in New York at that time that riding around at night, you couldn't play. If you was a cool guy, and I know this kind of sound kind of crazy, if you was cool, you wasn't playing obscene, loud rap music late at night. You had something cool on. You was playing something smooth. So we was like, we need to get to those street dudes that want to play something smooth.
I just want to make a note real quick, because 50 dropped the project, and I remember a lot of people didn't understand it. The Cecilia Southside mixtape, where he's rapping over Kenny Burke, Keep Rising to the Top, Moon Man, all these old records, and people was like, well, this is soft. Like, why is 50 rapping over all these R&B records? Back then, if you was a gangster, like, because you used to see it on the block, we were just like little kids, but the old heads and the dudes who were really serious, you would hear Rick James coming out their car. Like, you wouldn't hear Eric B and Rakim, like, necessarily. Not at night, because at night you'll be with your lady, probably.
With your lady.
Going to the club.
You're not want to bring in too much attention to yourself. You're trying to be easy and push through the block, kind of cool.
Kinda
just trying
key.
To push through, check on your bread, make sure the avenue is cool. You're going where you're going. Yeah. So that was the vibe, especially in New York. That was the vibe in New York. So we was like, how can we recapture that?
Right.
And that brought us to that element of saying, you know what? The groove and the beat got to be right. And as a rapper, there's no place to hide. Right. You really got to get your thing off. You can't hide, because the music isn't really hip hop. So it's not like you can hide behind the head nod all the time. It's like, nah, it's music. So you got to really find your pocket and go.
One pivotal record for you guys, one really big record early on in Trackmasters, I feel like, is when Heavy D gave you a call to work with this new group that he was working with, right?
So For Real.
Play a little bit of this. There was a Trackmasters remix as well. Now, did you do the original, or you guys did the remix?
We did the whole album.
You did the whole thing. What you know about this, Chris?
Love this song.
I just did the dance.
You can do that one more time.
With the raindrop. That's funny.
Lou, you remember this one? We was like in PS1A. Nah, we was in high school at this time.
Yeah. Wow.
We was in high school. Okay.
So, I know I shouldn't even talk about this, but this is the project that broke up the original Trackmasters.
Okay.
This is the project that did it, because they were unsigned. Heavy didn't have a deal for them. God bless the dead. That's the homie. He didn't have a deal for them. He was doing it all out of pocket and on good faith. Like, I know if I get it done, Andre will sign it. But, you know, at the end of the day, at that point, Hev had no prior track record of bringing an R&B group through.
Right.
But Hev knew that everyone knew Hev had a great ear for music, and he could put it together.
Right.
So the other two members of Trackmasters was like, I don't want to work on this project if we don't have paperwork. Mm. Make Hev give us some paperwork. And it was like, yo, but it's Hev. Like,
and Heavy D was huge at this time. Heavy D was
huge,
like...
huge, massive, like, massive.
And it was different because it was pop, but he was respect. So he was kind of like what Pitbull was, maybe, or Flo Rida. But imagine if hip-hop really respect... Like, the records reached that far as those Flo Rida Pitbull records.
Yeah.
But Pete Rock was his cousin. Like, Diddy came up looking up to Heavy D. He was the man. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. So,
and when you say Andre wanted to sign him, this is Andre Harrell.
Andre Harrell.
At Uptown Records.
At Uptown Records, okay. Right. So it was like, listen, if there's no contract, I'm not going to work on the record. So Cat started jumping ship and falling out. And it was like, you know, one guy left, another guy left. And so Tone asked me, he was like, yo, what do I do? And I'm like, we're halfway in the album already. What do you mean? What do you do? We finished the record. And salute to Terry Robinson, who wrote most of that album. Her pen is psycho, still psycho to this day. Terry Robinson was writing these songs like, I mean, it was literally come in, write a song a day. Come in, write a song. Oh, I got an idea. Oh, I got a... And banging them out. And the next thing you know, the album was done. And it was like the only one thing that I think we all regret in hindsight, and we had talked about it, but no one executed it. I said, we need to make two albums right now because Jason's voice is going to change.
Mm.
And when his voice changes, it's going to be different. It was like, yeah, we'll be fine. And we didn't do two albums at once. We should have did two albums at once.
Mm.
And, or at least an extra set of songs. And we didn't.
Because that voice at that time was so soft and smooth.
Baby boy. He was unbelievable. They were starting to call him, like, they were looking at this group as like the next Jackson.
Jackson 5, definitely. And it might sound silly to say now, but back then, he definitely had that Michael Jackson.
The afro, the quality.
Every little... There was two really big singles off of this album was Candy Rain and this one right here, Every Little Thing You Do. So... In a lot of ways, this is what birthed the Trackmasters as we know it. Would you say?
Because
you said it kind of broke up the old one and brought you and Tone and Poke closer together.
Yeah. I mean, at this time, I would say this was like the end of... This is the beginning of the new Trackmasters.
Okay.
This is the beginning of the new Trackmasters.
At what point, one of the other artists that, you know, you guys... have worked with a lot and very instrumental was Mariah Carey. Now, Mariah Carey was signed to Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
She was married to the boss, Tommy Mottola.
Mr. Mottola.
And she had a phenomenal Visions of Love, like phenomenal like R&B album. It was very adult. I remember my mother buying the Mariah Carey album, and it was something that your moms would listen to. It was like adult, contemporary, and she could sing her ass off.
Mm-hmm.
But Mariah then started to change years later. She became Home Woman, started hanging around Old Dirty Bastard, and Diddy and Mace, and Trackmasters. But the sound began to change. Mm-hmm. Talk about when you guys hooked up with Mariah, where she was in her career, and kind of the evolution of that and the role that you guys played.
Well, the funny thing with Mariah, people don't realize, Mariah, she's about that funk. She's about that groove. You know, she was this pop princess at the time because that's kind of what Sony marketed her as. But she was very aware of the pocket, very aware of the soul and the grooves. She actually used to sing background for Brenda K. Starr back in the day.
Okay.
And so she, you know, she knows the zone. So it wasn't like foreign to her. It wasn't like, let us introduce you to the funk. It was like she knew what it was, you know.
And that was also how you got on as an R&B singer back in, like, Faith Evans sung backup for Mary J. Blige. Mary J. Blige sung backup for, was it?
Jeff Redd.
Yeah, you called and told me?
Jeff Redd.
Yeah.
Jeff Redd. Well, yep. Jeff Redd kind of discovered her, and right. I think they was doing some things together, and she was, I don't know if she was an official background singer, but right. they worked together in early, early stages right. of her career.
Father MC also, she sung like backing she vocals with Father MC. Yeah,
well, back
MC.
When there was backup singing.
Right, so, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but I thought it was a good point. It was that Mariah having the background singing for Brenda K. Starr, like this is how you got on mm-hmm. as an R&B. There was no SoundCloud to load up your joint onto.
Everything's digital now. Do a YouTube cover.
No. You had to earn your chops by...
And there really weren't any R&B mixtapes at the time. It wasn't like you were making an R&B mixtape to put out there for people. It right. really didn't exist, you know. But, you know, the Mariah Carey thing for me, excuse me, especially was a little crazy because Gordon, Commissioner Gordon, had actually worked with her prior to us working with her. And this is that he had a production company called Ghost Brothers. And they did a ton of records with Mariah. None of them actually came out because there was some sort of discrepancy and a fallout between her and another member of the Ghost Brothers, and it didn't work out to where it was just like, these songs are never going to get the light of day. And I think that may have been the catalyst to her wanting to get a new group of producers. Mm. You know what I mean? She still had her typical pop producers that she worked with, but she didn't have that urban street crew that could really make it happen. And at the time we were working in Columbia Records, we were really flipping the roster. We were like, anyone that was on the list that needed fixing, we would fix. You know, so it just kind of worked out well.
But did Mariah need fixed? Because Mariah was huge. Like,
well, when I say fixing, I mean fixing on trying to expand to the street and trying to expand. You know, as an artist, you never really want to do the same thing over and over. So it's like, how many, you know, she could have continued to do these big pop ballads, but then she would have become Celine Dion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And she was still a very young girl at the time. People fail to realize that Mariah was still young. She wasn't like, I'm ready to just sing ballads for the rest of my life. You know, she was like, I really want to get some grooves, you know. And I remember the first time we were going to go in the studio with her, and I was like, she's not going to show up, dude. She's not going to show up. Trust me, she's not going to show up. It's just going to be us. It's cool. So we had our own little thing going on, and she showed up. It was like, oh.
What made you think that she wasn't going to show up?
Because she was the number one artist, female artist in the world at the time.
I mean,
I don't know. And we were not the number one producers in the world at the time. So I don't know. You know what I mean?
But she showed up.
But she showed up, came through, and was like, good. Wasn't no attitude, no Hollywood, no. Actually, was cracking jokes and everything. And it was a little new for me from the stories that I've heard of the Mariah that I heard about, and you know, the spoiled and throwing temper tantrums and blah 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 blah. So it was refreshing, like, oh, like we really gonna get some work done, like we really gonna get it popping. And that's kind of was the start.
What's the first record that y'all worked on?
Oh man, I don't even think the first record we worked on came out, to be honest with you, because it was at that time we were in the system, so it was really like a trial and error kind of thing,
right,
to really figure it out. I really got to sit and think which was the first actual release that we worked on that they put out. But I remember going to her house, going to Mr. Mottola's house. The funny thing about that was we didn't...
You seen the distinction? And he still calls him Mr. Mottola.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's Mr. Mottola. Listen, they would send a car for us. You couldn't drive to his house to work. He had a studio in the house. So they would send a limo to pick us up. So we'd be at the office and say, yo, the car will be here at so-and-so time. And it's like, well, I'm cool. I'll just drive up. They was like, no, you don't drive to Mr. Mottola's house. I was like, oh. Okay.
That's legit.
So they sent the limo, and in the car is just me, Tone, and Tony Maserati, the engineer. Salute to Maz. Maserati's killing the game. He has all these kind of Pro Tools plugins now and everything. He's one of the engineers that mixed a lot of Mariah Carey's songs. Big time engineer. One of the first engineers I ever seen actually get points on a record.
Wow.
Engineers don't get points. You mix the record, you get your fee. Mm-hmm. Good night, you go home. Producers get points. No, Mr. Maserati, I'll call him Mr. Maserati, got points mixing on records, which is crazy. So we would take these limo rides, these hour-long limo rides sometimes, because it was like far away.
Did he live in the Batcave?
How about this? His nearest neighbor was probably 25 acres away.
Wow.
Like, it was just land. It was just land. You know what I mean? I hated going there at night because I always felt like I was, like, just going to be take it for a ride. Right, it's right. Like, let's go early. Right. Let's go real early. So it's still daylight. And then, oh man, I can't think of the, I want to say it was Under the Stairs. I can't remember which one. It was so many records. It's so right. hard for me with so many records. But one of the trips, it was like fixing a record, and we're just like, okay, how are we going to get back into the zone? Because we had like a great session and wanted to get into a zone. And Tony Maserati was shuffling around in the back of the limo, and he opened up the little part where the drinks is at, and it was a big bottle of Wild Turkey. While we bodied that entire bottle of Wild Turkey, got to the studio, crushed the record, came back, and it was like everyone was going crazy in the office the next day, like, oh, this record is crazy. It was like, you gotta drink more Wild Turkey. That's the secret.
The next day, Tommy Mottola bought Wild Turkey, the right. company.
A couple cases. I mean, you worked with so many dope artists, though, and so many legends. Aside from Mariah Carey, you've done work with R. Kelly, who's a phenomenal artist and I'm a really big fan of. Speak about how that came about, and you know, what are some of the records that you worked on with him?
R. Kelly was interested. When it came to Trackmaster Records, I was like the A&R of every project. So it was just weird because I had to really stay in the loop with everything and every artist and what they did prior to us and what how we could take them to the next level and, you know, what would work for them, what wouldn't work for them, you know, what they might agree to, what they might not agree to. And it was difficult at times because we would have our meetings were like arguments. Like it would be us in a room and just playing records and not arguments, more like battles, like play this record, play that song, play that idea, play that idea. And we really discussed music before we did it. And a lot of times people didn't know that about it. They think we just kind of went in and freestyled and was like, oh, we just threw some drums on it and we just looped up something and there you go. And I was like, if you think it's that easy, you go loop it. You go loop the same record and show me.
Well, did Maserati mix for you guys too, or was it always a different engineer?
We used Maserati and Rich Travali. Those were like two of the main engineers that we used. If the record was a little more street, we'd use Kevin Krause. Sometimes Jason Goldstein, who's a big engineer now. Jason was more of like our tracking engineer. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes when these other guys weren't available, Jason was like, "Give me a crack at it. I'll knock it out." Mm-hmm. I was like, let him do it. He tracked it. He knows the elements of the record. And Jason really rolled up his sleeves and pulled himself up by the bootstraps and became a banging, like, top-tier engineer.
Because the thing about Trackmasters was there was a quality to the sound. Like, and you could tell that from Bad Boy had it. You know, when you talk about, like, Motown, people talk about the Motown sound. There's a quality, there's a texture, there's a feeling that comes with that sound. I feel like Trackmasters had a unique quality to their sound. I feel like Bad Boy had it. But, you know, not everybody has it. You know what I'm saying? And that was one of the things that you guys had.
That's one of the things, I think, outside of mixing. People think that the mix is very important. The mix is one of the most important elements to a song. But the other important element that a lot of people ignored was the tracking part. Mm. You have to track your records properly. You can't have distorted sounds. You can't have... You know, you have to make sure that the way you track this music, that it's tracked out very well. A lot of times people would track two tracks of drums. I'm like, no, spread my drums out. I need all my drums spread out. You know, I might even want stereo of drums sometimes, depending on the sounds. And that's kind of one of the things that separated us from a lot of other people was that people didn't really care about, they wouldn't even be at the tracking session. They would just show up ready for the mix. And I'm like, you didn't go to the tracking session, so you don't know what they use. You don't know. At that time, it wasn't in the box. We had actual outboard gear, so you had to know the outboard gear. You had to know what processors you were using to make sure that your stuff sounded good.
You're getting real, real technical. I just want to explain. The tracking process, for the listeners who don't know, is the recording process, but not just the vocal recording, but the instruments get laid down. Your drums are one track, your bass is another track, but sometimes, like Rich said, your drums can be 10 tracks.
You know what I'm saying?
Or your snare should be on one and your kick should be on one and the bass is different, and when R. Kelly comes in and sings his top line vocals and his harmonies and ad libs, and so that's the tracking session.
And it's weird with R. Kelly because it's like, to go back to R. Kelly for 1 second, he was the kind of guy that, like, how we're all in this room, if we start recording and he's singing, no one can leave the room until he's finished singing. Mm. Like, you can't be like, oh, I got to go to the bathroom. Because it's like, no, you're going to ruin the energy. You're going to ruin the vibe. No one can leave. You have to stay until it's done. It's kind of crazy.
And he, I mean, this is known, this is not, but he doesn't write. He went in there and did he just freestyle these records?
Nah, he didn't freestyle. Sometimes he did, but you know what? He had people that would be with him that he would kind of say things to, and they would kind of jot down and kind of put, you know what I mean? He had like assistants and stuff that worked with him.
So okay. Based on what he felt or what he would kind of give out, they'd put it together?
Yeah, well, they would just write it down. He would still put it together. I mean, this guy, you know, I'll be honest with you, he's probably, for me, top five songwriters.
Yeah.
Because the guy can write any style of music. Like, there was this one thing that he did. It was called Love. I got it at home. I think it was Love Lace or Love Land. It was called Love Land. But all Love Land was a compilation of songs that he wrote for other people that they didn't take.
Right.
So he wrote a song for Stevie Wonder. Stevie didn't take it. He wrote a song for Michael Jackson. Mike didn't take it. He, like, a bunch of songs that he wrote for other people that they didn't take. And it was like, it's just sitting there. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to put it.
Loveland never officially came out. It was a bonus disc on Chocolate Factory. I feel like it was maybe six songs.
Yeah.
On Chocolate Factory, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But Loveland,
I got to get you the one that I have. The one I have has about 12 records, but the one I have, I got from him. So.
Right. Mm. Oh, no. You seen that?
Is that crazy? I just came out.
You want to call him right now and
no,
say what's up?
No. Although I did just produce a record for him recently.
On Black Panties album,
yeah,
right?
The one with him and Kelly Rowland. I just did that record for him. Shout to Sly. Sly wrote the song, and me and my partner Dave Anthony, we produced it together. And it's so funny because that record, we went back and forth with that song for about a year, and they were all actually mad at me because I wanted to hear the record before I signed off on it, and they were just like, who do you think you are? His new management was, who do you think you are? And I was like, I've been number one with him already, dude. I don't need to do it again. I want to work with him because I think he's super dope, but I don't need to, you know what I mean?
It's like you said, you can't pay you to do something you don't want to do.
You can't.
Yeah.
Here's the record, All the Way, right?
Yeah.
All right, we're just going to do a snippet because we don't want to get sued. I know we, Rich Nice is going to clear us on his end of the record, but I interviewed Robert a couple of times, but we ain't cool like that. So if Kels want his money, we're going to have to give Kels his money.
You just got
to
tell him come play some basketball. That's it. Yeah. Tell him come play, beat you at the basketball court. He's a basketball fiend.
Now, you know, when we talk about R&B and hip-hop, and I think that's kind of the vibe of this whole thing, and I think one of the quintessential moments in R&B and hip hop is this Best of Both Worlds album. That's when R. Kelly and Jay-Z were supposed to make an album that converged and went 100 times platinum, and just blew up the world because they were the two biggest stars at the time, respectively, in their genres. Mm-hmm. What do you remember most from that album, from the creation of that album?
Oh, man, listen. I actually have unreleased songs from that album.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
She's got all,
ladies and gentlemen, my friend Rich Nice. We're going to Rich Nice's crib right after this.
Well, you know what it was? It took a lot of different turns. And Robert is the kind of person that musically, and I don't even know if I could even speak for him musically, but he has a lot of ideas constantly. And he wants to express them all. To the point that him and Tone really, really had a great sort of bond when it came to exchanging ideas consistently. But he worked completely different than from how Jay-Z worked. Like, completely different. Like, I've been in a studio with Jay, and Jay is just kind of like, let's get it done tonight. And that's Jay's, from what I've been around him, his whole mentality is, we're not dragging this song into tomorrow. We're finishing the song tonight. And that's not necessarily how Rob is all the time. So it became difficult. There were obstacles, you know, there were obstacles. And
I had read somewhere that they recorded a lot of that album separately. Like R would do his parts, and I guess at this point maybe you were FedExing drives over. Or I don't know what you were doing, but Jay would do his parts. Like they weren't necessarily in the studio for
that. Oddly
enough,
Tone would fly back and forth to Chicago, and it was weird because you know, we'd do our A&R thing in the office and figure out how we're going to, you know, approach the record and, you know, what's going to be good and what's not going to be good. And, you know, for the most part, it was easy to deal with Jay, you know, once again, like I said, because his home mentality was, let's finish this tonight. But it wasn't that simple when it came to trying to finish some of the records with Rob. It wasn't that simple. And I think the project still came out amazing.
Oh, my God.
And I'm super proud of it. You know, it's one of the feathers in my cap, I say, you know, as far as a record that I've been a part of, you know, on the A&R side, you know, even the second one, like
Unfinished Business,
you know, I had to go track down Slick Rick. I had to go track down Dougie Fresh, you know, to put that together. And it was so weird because these are friends of mine. You mm-hmm. know, I know Rick for years. You know, he's from the Bronx. He's from Uptown. Mm-hmm. Shout to White Plains Road. and Doug, me and Doug share the same birthday. We're both Virgos, so mm-hmm. that's my Virgo brother. So it's like, you know, Doug came instantly. I called Doug, yo, I need you. He was like, where you at? I'm coming right now. Mm. He like literally came to the studio the same day I called him.
I'm gonna be honest, that first Best of Both Worlds album is one of my favorites. I feel like it's very underrated. I think people let the drama actually get ahead of what the actual music was. I think the music on that was like really dope and well done. The second one, not so much.
Well, here's the thing.
You my man, 100 grand.
No. Well, here's the thing. At the end of the day, the second record was an attempt to salvage the first record to at least get them on tour.
Right.
Because they missed a huge touring opportunity the first time around. So it was like, you can't go back on tour with an old album, especially not at that time. There wasn't reoccurring singles like that. There wasn't no like, let's just do another internet blast and we'll be straight. It wasn't that kind of, you know what I mean? So it's like, how can we, really it was supposed to have been an EP. It wasn't even supposed to be an album.
Right.
But it was like, at that time, an EP was a dirty word to a record company. Because they're like, wait, we're going to spend the same amount of money to market it, but we're going to sell price of half the money?
Right.
Uh-uh. So let's go. So it's like, okay, there's some records that we need that kind of are left over from the first one.
Mm.
There's some new records, and let's add some new things. Let's put some new things together. And it all started as a conversation. It was a conversation that came about, and it was like, can we do it? And it was like, yes, we can.
And just, again, for the listeners who may be unfamiliar, Jay and R. Kelly went to go do this album. I feel like it was about 2002, Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah, something like that.
And that's when R. Kelly also got hit with his controversy with it, with his sex tape and the ping and the headlines, and you know, that kind of stepped in front of what the project was and the music. And I think both sides took a break. R went to go handle his legal thing. Jay said, well, I can't stand around and wait for you to sort this out. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And Jay went to go do his own solo thing.
Yeah.
And for the smoke to clear, because it was really just bad.
It was
timing.
Bad press.
That was a rough time.
It really was.
It was just because they really converged at the same time. It was just like horrible time.
I remember I got a phone call from my mom and she said, I'm not going to hear about you in any sort of stuff.
Fiesta, fiesta.
And I was like, no, mom, you're okay.
My mom still gets mad at me because I buy R. Kelly's records. I can't believe you listen to his. I can't believe you buy his records. Did you see that tape?
No, I know a lot of people that hold him over for that. A lot of people that do not want to relate themselves with him just because of those things that happened over those years. And I honestly, personally, he is too damn good of an artist, singer, songwriter, like you say, for me to base his career off of something that happened like that. I mean, you got Chris Brown nowadays who gets into stuff every other week.
Listen.
But that doesn't deny you that X was a great album.
Some of the most musical geniuses have issues. My thing with the R. Kelly thing was I never saw the tape.
Right.
Not once, because I saw what was being advertised. You saw it?
No, I didn't see it.
I saw, Lou, have you seen the R. Kelly tape?
Come on.
Oh, don't lie.
Well, you are a sergeant first class, so you're an upstanding member of this community. I knew what was being advertised on the tape.
Right.
And from what they were saying, what it was, I was like, well, I don't want to see that.
I'm good.
I'm good.
Right.
So my mom is mad at me. I'm like, did you see it? No, Ma, did you? Like, I didn't watch it. You know, so there's that. So R. Kelly.
Yeah. Let's pull out of that.
Let's leave it at that.
Whoa.
If you told me he was releasing an album tomorrow, I'd pre-order it and listen.
For real.
R. Kelly is still Kells.
Real quick, another artist I want to touch on. I don't know if I have the right mix. I'm here on the Beats Music app. I haven't updated to Apple Music yet.
Okay.
But Michael Jackson. Trackmasters work with Michael Jackson. Oh, wait, no, there's an intro here. Hold on. This isn't the one. You guys did the remix.
Yeah, we did the remix.
All right. Wow, this is a long record. All right. This is the wrong version. Beats Music does not have the Trackmasters remix. You guys are
come on,
fucking
Dre.
Up,
come
Dre.
On, Dre. Come but, on.
That's why Apple's out.
Well, shit. Dre's still getting that money. Apple is just the revamp of Beats Music. I just haven't transferred my account yet. Michael Jackson, You Rock My World. This was a time. This was Invincible. Still the king of pop, obviously, but we were a long way from Thriller. And a long way from Bad,
right.
And even a long way from Dangerous. And there was people questioning whether or not Michael Jackson could kind of captivate the audience. And he came to Trackmasters, and you guys did the You Rock My World remix and put Jay-Z on it, put Jay-Z and Michael Jackson on the same record. What was your experience working with Mike?
You know, it's so weird because Mike actually, like, we didn't, and not that we wouldn't have, but we didn't ask for that remix. Mike actually asked for us. He actually sought us out. Like, I want the Trackmasters.
But he was notorious for that. Like, and get back, like, Mike was a tastemaker to the point where Dangerous, Teddy Riley produced a lot of that album, and he sought Teddy Riley out. Irv Gotti said, I don't know, it never came to pass, but that he had reached out to Irv to do some records that just maybe never came to pass. But Mike had his finger on the pulse of what was popping.
He kept his ears on. He listened to everything. So it was kind of weird. For me, I'll tell you, my first time interacting with Mike was a remix that we did, Trackmasters, called They Don't Really Care About Us.
Okay, right.
So that was the first remix. And I honestly, it was weird because this is this is not the typical kind of Trackmaster record for us to remix. This is like a big world record. And once again, you know, we do our conversations and, you know, becomes, well, what do you think? Polka's like, you're bugging. And, you know, so this goes on in our sessions because we're trying to really figure out the right approach to the song, to the music. And we had, there was like hand claps and finger snaps and all this.
And he was beating his chest. And
right, so when we remixed it, we kind of did all of this stuff out of a drum machine. And I was like, dude, this is Michael Jackson. Like, we're going to give him drum machine hand claps and drum machine finger snaps. We're going to look whack. We're going to look real whack. So I was like, okay, bring in the microphone. So we set up the booth, brought in microphones, did a whole bunch of hand claps with like live hand claps, brought in different people to do hand claps and everything like that. Good. Everybody's happy. Cool. We're going to leave. No one's expecting Mike to come because, you know, he's just not going to come. So
I said to do. He just married Lisa Marie Presley.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
He's the king of pop.
Yeah,
sure, Bubbles needed bananas.
Right.
You know. So everyone leaves. Polk goes. Everyone leaves. We go, you know, the engineer's still tweaking what he needs to tweak. He's going to email and call, not even email, he's gonna call when it's done and he's gonna
feel like there was email there.
No, there were emails, but we went Sony, so there were emails, but
you couldn't file.
Right. And he was gonna leave a CD there at the Hit Factory desk for one of us to pick up in the morning. So I leave my knapsack there. You know, once again, Rich Nice is always known for having a little knapsack or something. I spent more hours in the studio than any human being at that time. So I leave to go have some drinks with some people, whatever. And I'm going back to get my bag. And when I go back, I look in the room and I see the engineer at the board doing what he does. But then I see another person in the room. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And I go to, oh, that's your man right there. I said, just what I said. Oh, that's your man right there. Bugging out that he's in the room. So now I don't know if I should go in the room or not, because I'm like, ooh, this could be kind of tricky. You know what I mean? So I'm like, let me go and get my bag from the lounge. Because my bag is in the lounge. I get my bag from the lounge, put on my bag, and I'm just going to go in, dap the engineer, and I'm gone. I go in.
That was your plan.
That was my plan.
Okay.
That was my plan. I get into the room. Your man Mike is dancing to the remix. And I wanted to laugh.
You had to see Rich Nice do his Michael Jackson.
And I wanted to laugh. But I felt like if I laugh, I'm going to lose my job. Because this is the...
What you laughing at, Rich Nice?
You know what I mean?
That's so funny.
So it was just dope that he was super cool and
you
super
ain't never
humble.
Seen a King of Pop dance before? And, Rich Nice?
He said how much he loved it. You know what I mean? And he commented on the live hand claps and the live finger snaps. And I felt... vindicated.
So did you call Tone and be, I told you.
Of course I did.
I was like the stamp.
What do you think? You know what I mean? But it was so funny because when you're doing a remix, you don't want to set up a microphone to do live hand claps and live thing. Like, I'm out of here. I'm about to do this. Shorty's on her way. I'm going to get drinks. It's Friday night or whatever night it was. You know what I mean? You're not even thinking about live hand claps or live finger snaps at all. And, the mere fact that he commented on them made me feel like, okay, we did what we needed to do, you know. So that was kind of like my, and it was weird because Pope was gone and Tone was gone. When he reached out, he actually reached out to Tone. Somehow he got a hold of Tone, and Tone thought thought it was somebody playing on his phone. When he said it was Mike, he thought it was somebody playing games on his phone. He was like, yeah, you're playing games. But it was really Mike calling Tone's phone, so it was kind of crazy. So that's how the other remix stuff started to come about. And then we kind of, it was weird. Like, after that, we kind of became like a, not a go-to, but like, we started getting more Michael Jackson remixes. I guess because it was successful, but still, it was kind of weird. Like, I'm still more proud of They Don't Really Care About Us than any other remix we did. Especially because... because
he commented you on the hand clap.
Well, not even that. Not even that. Honestly, it's because it's a record that you would not have expected us to remix. Right. It wasn't a typical, let me throw a groove on it and give you that beat. And, you know what I mean? It was something else, you know, because we were the hip-hop dudes, you know? And it's like, if we can give you something else that we're not known for, to me, it was another feather in our cap.
I would try to search for it on the Beast Music app, but I have a feeling... I should just upgrade to Apple Music now. I don't want to embarrass myself now.
Not twice, at least.
Yo, Rich. Yeah, Rich Nice, though. I mean, this is the homie, man. Like, we've had these conversations in private, and we just wanted to bring them on to the podcast and bring them to you. And we have many conversations about music, about life, about... So I want you to take part in this next segment that Chris does. We have our listeners email us relationship advice. They send it to... Red Light Special PC at Gmail. So if you want some relationship advice, because part of R&B and is the relationship is the romance aspect. So we have a relationship advice segment.
Yes. And we usually choose about 2 to 3 to go over, but I got this really good one. It's a little long, so I cut it down to just one today.
It's a doozy.
But I wanted to go into it. I ran it by Rob, actually, and he was like, yo, go. Go. Especially that we have you here. You talk about Friday nights, getting hit up from a girl, going out for drinks.
Love advice from Rich Nice.
That has a nice sound to it. So I got an email and it says, okay, so I've been seeing this girl on the side. I have a girlfriend and she has a man. And when we find time, we sneak off. We go and spend time, mostly physical, but we do end up going out from time to time to the movies, maybe for a drink or to dinner. Our nights almost always end in sex. And the sex is great. It's been good between us, but we have an understanding, or at least I thought we did. One day she complained to me that her man wasn't satisfying her sexually. I let it go in one ear, not the other. Granted, I'm messing with his girl, but I don't ever ask about their relationship, and I never, ever talk bad about him. I know it sounds crazy, but talking down to him is just so disrespectful to me. So we've been carrying on for a few months, and 3 weeks ago, she told me she dumped her man. There is no way that I'm leaving my girl, and I hope she doesn't expect me to. But ever since she became single, she wants to spend even more time with me. And I'm just afraid that she wants to get more serious. What do I do? God damn.
That's what happens when you tap the triangle at an angle and make the spine tangle.
Hey. That's complicated.
I'm gonna let you take first crack at this. Oh my, I got so many.
I think that this is a very down low. This is an R. Kelly song.
Call him.
Somebody call Robert. I should get on the phone, right?
I mean,
you know, I'm gonna say this. It's a classic case of the chickens coming home to roost. When you play those games, you know, I'll be honest, he should be lucky she's not pregnant. Because it would change the complete scope of what's going on. He probably has to start to move into the friendship zone with her and kind of start to let her understand that, you know, unfortunately, what you had fell apart, but you knew where we were when we first started, and you know my situation, and I was respectful of yours, and you were respectful of mine. We need to still maintain that same respect, because just because yours kind of crashed and burned, mine is still flying high.
So,
unfortunately, I'm going to give you the option for us to just stop and just be friends, or, you know, we can continue, but my home situation isn't going to change, and I need you to respect that and understand that nothing has changed for me. I'm in the same exact place that we started.
Wow.
Lou, harsh reality.
Lou, you want to weigh in here, or you want to leave this one alone?
I don't even think they should be friends.
Oh. I'm not mad at you.
It's a done deal. She's going to destroy his home. So he got to let it go completely. Change his number. The whole nine.
Yeah, but he might create a stalker out of that.
Yeah. See,
if you shut her down, the next thing is... Yeah, hello? Hi, my name is Jackie, and I got to tell you something.
Huh? Rich just got the crazy eyes. Yeah, I didn't see it, but...
First of all, my favorite part of this, my man is something else. He said, where's the part that he said, she says that he wasn't doing his job sexually, and I don't like to talk down about him because that's disrespectful. Bro, yeah. You are sleeping with his chick. He was like, man, I'll sleep with your girl, but man, I won't ever talk down about you because that's where I draw the line. Is that where you draw the line?
Well, I'm saying there's a player code. You got to respect the player code. There's a player code. Listen, I do not want to discuss your situation with your man. I'm not going to talk bad about him. Whatever you and him go through, y'all go through, because what we're doing is what we're doing.
I get it. But it was just funny.
It's funny, though.
That's
it
when
is.
He draws the line. Like, what if dude approaches him? He's like, listen, yo, man, you're sleeping with my girl, but I never talk bad about you.
Right. And he makes it sound almost like he knows the cat. So it's like, I find funny.
I don't think he knows
well,
the
it
cat.
Takes two. It's not like he's raping her. She's there because she wants to be right. there.
Oh, no, of course. I mean, obviously, they're both unhappy in some sort.
Which is true.
In their relationships at home, right. Which is why both of them were cheating. Hers happened to not work out. I think if I was the guy, I would slowly ease my way out of that. But I for sure would ease my way out of that, because she is no longer with someone. Now she's looking for someone. And who is she going to come looking for? The person that was satisfying her sexually.
Yeah, bro. She's
going to become a homewrecker.
You got to get out of that. And you know, the thing is, too, and this goes into a lot of, I think it comes down to a basic thing a lot of people that ask us for advice is, a lot of people, the relationship starts off one way. Your relationships start off like pretty good, right, and fun. And then there's a turning point where a relationship changes. And whether it's whether that's your main girl or your side chick, you guys had an understanding and the relationship changed. And when the change happens, you have to address that change. Like, okay, something changed. The understanding that we had is now different.
Right.
And he has to, I think, address it and then move on, because it sounds like he's not willing to. If he's made it clear that he's not going nowhere, like, she's gonna have a lot of free time on his hands.
she got a lot of free time.
But that's what you get, brother.
Look, go by her
house. Stay with your chick.
Look, eat some fava beans. Go by her house and light her bathroom up with her in there with you. Guarantee you, she will think you're disgusting and never want nothing to do with you again.
Right.
You're done.
This kind of reminds me of Erykah Badu's Next Lifetime, which is one of my favorite records of all time.
Here we go again.
By far, Erykah Badu. Erykah Badu, Next Lifetime. I guess I'll see you next lifetime. She goes, you know, I'm in a situation. I feel like this is that case.
No, that was different because they were both in situations, and she ain't nobody told you to dump your man.
Right. You didn't discuss this with me.
It's similar, though. It's similar because now she doesn't have that man. So now she's the one intruding on him still. And he's like, look, I'm in a situation. And he's saying he's not leaving that situation. I think she needs to just find somebody.
I'm going to tell you what he should do. This is what he should do. He should find somebody that he knows she'll like and set them up. So that it'll take her mind off of it, and while they start their new thing, he fades to black.
That's just weird.
That is weird.
I would just break out.
That's actually but also genius.
That's also what you get, brother. Because she knew he knew that she had a man, and he was probably going in there purposely trying to do better than what her man did. Like, you know when you. Like, you got something to prove. Like,
this is what you get for cheating.
You shouldn't have put so much into it, you know.
Nah. I disagree.
You should have been weak.
You're supposed to knock it out the park anytime.
Anytime
up the bat. Holy cow. It's a home run every time.
You shouldn't do. Whatever her man level is at, you need to do one right below that so you stay in the safe zone.
But listen, the minute
you start redlining, look, it's like when you're mixing a record, Rich Nice. Okay? you want to bring it to its peak without redlining, right? Brother right here was redlining.
So, look, but hold on. Sometimes you got to touch the red a little bit.
I'm just confused because don't men have like this way of doing, I guess you would call it like side chick situations. I mean, isn't there like a guideline you guys have? Like you don't get too close or you don't see her that often. Like you got to keep her to, or him if it's a girl doing,
I'm going
to
tell you what happened.
I wouldn't know, but I clearly from the messages and the mail that we got, men don't have this all figured out because you never get it right.
Like, men never have it all figured out.
Every week we get from a new dude, like, oh man, I fucked up with my side chick.
Yeah.
The problem
men
is
been trying
this.
To figure this out since the beginning of the time and don't. So just fucking don't have a side piece.
Here's the problem. The problem is when you start treating a side chick like the main chick, we're going to the movies.
He did say that too.
What? That's you're going funny. To the what? That's your side? What are you doing?
Isn't this how Usher ended up with Confessions?
What are you doing? Foul ball. Flag on the play. You should not have been in no movie theater. Y'all supposed to get together, smash, go home. That's it.
You're not supposed to take her out.
And there you go, Rich Nice.
I mean, that's what I heard.
That's what Rich Nice heard. Nah, so good luck with yours, brother. Hit us back. Let us know how that turns. Let us know how that works out for you. Man, she going to email us next week. Like, yo.
It's crazy.
All right, man. So cool. Rich, real quick, man, before we wrap, man, we spoke a lot about your past. What are you working on right now, man?
Man, I got a project that's out right now called Underground Burn Music. I got some R&B on there as well. This new artist named Malik that we're working with. A song called Love Drug that's incredible. I actually produced on it as well. I got a few records that I got to give you. Great R&B records to play. I got some stuff coming out for the summer. Through another compilation for the actual A&R Room, which is a segment I do on Sway in the Morning on Sirius XM. And on the Sirius XM show, it's mostly all hip-hop. I do play some R&B and other genres in there, but it drives them a little crazy because it's
Shay 45. That's right. Eminem station. Right.
Exactly. So this particular project is a multi-genre project since, you know, I've A&R'd every style of music from opera to bhangra. So what we're going to do now is implement, you know, I got some dance music on there. There's some reggae on there. There's some R&B. I got some great collaboration songs. I'm gonna give you some stuff to play. It's really cool. I got a Sharifa record. A brand new Sharifa record. These new Sharifa records are kind of incredible. Like, she kind of just sat back and mastered her craft, and still working with Chucky Thompson. Her brother's producing now, and it's kind of come full circle. It's kind of crazy. Bobby Valentino got a great record.
Okay.
I mean, there's a few good things. I'm gonna give you guys some quality, solid R&B. that, you know, perhaps some babies will be made to.
Right, right. Shout out to Bobby Valentino, man.
Yeah, there's even a Megan Rochelle record on this project.
Wow.
How about that? When you hear this, you're going to be like, Megan Rochelle? Yes, she is on and popping.
That's what's up.
I know it's
bro.
Taking you a year to complete some records, but I want to hear those as soon as you got them.
Well, they're coming out for... At the end of this summer. They're coming out end of July. So I'll probably send you guys some stuff like in the next couple weeks.
Yeah. Send us some stuff for sure, man. We're gonna look out for that. And yeah, shout out to the A&R room. Shout out to Sway in the Morning. You know, I got my Rob Report segment on there. You know, shout out to MTV News also. That's
where
I'm at.
MTV News.
Monday through Friday.
It's fantastic. I love the things that you're doing over there.
Thank you, bro.
It's funny because as writers have left from over there, the question from the outside has always been, what's going to happen now? Because if they don't get the right guy in there, that whole thing is going to fall apart. And somehow, I guess kudos to them, they always manage to find the right guy to keep that quality, you know, because me being what I call an ambassador of the culture of hip hop, you know, I look at a lot of things and I'm quick to critique things when I see it and go, why did they write this? Or why did they write that? Or they put the wrong guy to interview this. And luckily and happily, I've never said that about anything I've read from you, so I'm happy.
Thank you. Nah, man, it's when you come from a lineage of obviously Sway, and Ramon Dukes. A lot of people don't know Ramon Dukes, but he was instrumental behind the scenes over there at MTV News.
Yes, indeed.
And Shaheen Reed, which was the face of it for a long time, that a lot of people knew, and Jason Rodriguez. When you come into the field of shoes, like, you know, that's like joining the Bulls after Jordan retired. Like, and I'm not trying to be Pete Myers.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm trying to get my Jordan on.
That's real.
So, you know, they definitely won championships and put banners up. And it inspired me just to be as dope as I am, man. And
dope.
You've been around. You for a lot of those interviews, man, a lot of times you might see us doing interviews when we were doing Rap Fix. Rich Nice was right there. You might not have seen him on camera, but he was a part of that whole thing when we were doing Rap Fix Live every week.
I used to love that show because it was really... really informative for people who really couldn't get to the culture any other way.
Right.
And I think it's important to shed light on, you know, not just the artists, but everybody involved in the music, even behind the scenes, you know, and you've done so much great work and you're still working. So I'm just looking forward to everything that you're doing.
I've been lucky. I've been making music since the seventh grade. I started producing. I was writing songs for Critique Atlantic Records in the seventh grade.
Wow.
And ever since then, I just continued to make music. I've been very, very blessed and very, very lucky to have this fantastic ride. And I think the thing that keeps me interested is just I always enjoy being creative. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't think about, I got to make a number one record. I got to make a number one song. But fortunately enough, I've been affiliated with a number one record almost every year of my career.
Right.
You know, I mean, I got to give you some Deborah Cox music. I got like it's all kind of number one records that I've been a part of that is just so dope that I can look back and say, damn, I forgot I did that one, too. You know,
that's a blessed career. Tell them where they could reach you out on Twitter and Instagram, man.
On Twitter, I'm Rich Nice Digital. On Instagram, I'm Rich Nice Digital. It's all the same thing. If you have music that you want to get to me for the A&R room or, you know, production or whatever, get at me. I'm pretty easy to find, or DM me. And then I have the A&R room has a Twitter as well. It's the letter N R room, because you know you can't put that symbol for so it's the letter A, the letter N, the letter R, and room. And follow us, we follow back.
Dope. Awesome. Very dope. Chris, man, where can they get you at?
At Chris Lova on everything. That's KRISLOVAA.
Okay.
Rob.
I was going to, you know what? I'm not going to ask you about. I was going to ask you what's up with the movie, but we're not going to do that.
No, we won't do that.
We're not going to do that.
We won't do that.
Chris, I got a White Tiger Society record coming out. How could I forget this? It's a band that I just A&R'd this project, and it's part of this new thing we're doing. It's called White Tiger Society. They actually left today to go on tour in Europe. They're doing Paris, a few places in France, a few places in London. The first single is called Day by Day. That's on SoundCloud right now. White Tiger Society, everything's spelled the same. The first song is Day by Day. And then we're going to follow up. We have a song with Stephen Marley that they did with Stephen Marley. And then they're going on tour. They're going to be opening for Stephen Marley. So shout to White Tiger Society.
They're a band?
They're a band, yeah. Three-piece band. Commissioner Gordon's band, exactly. Commissioner Gordon's in the band. So it's like, and he produced the record as well. I A&R'd the record. So that's coming right now. And shout to Kamani Marley, whose album is out as well.
Ah, Kamali's in New York too. Yeah, he's in town.
He's going to be on tour as well. It's going to be a cool Marley and White Tiger Society of collaboration on the road.
Very dope. Very dope. All right, cool. So y'all look out for that. And me, of course, at Rob Markman, R-O-B-M-A-R-K-M-A-N, on Instagram, on Twitter. And you can catch me on mtvnews.com. You know, that's where all the work is at, all the great work that we put over there until next week. And then I want to shout out my man, Lou, once again, man. Thanks for sending with us, bro, man. You good?
Yeah, I'm good. I had a good time, man. Okay. Thanks for having me.
You want to shout out your Twitter? We're going to get your followers up?
That's right. at LouArias15.
Yeah, that's LouArias15 on Twitter. So hit my man up. He's going out there to Kuwait. I'm going to miss you, bro. Like, this is my brother for real, man. So, you know, until he has out there, we're going to go out. We're going to get in some trouble. We're going to tear the city up.
I'm scared of that. Right, now. Listen. That sounds scary.
Listen, but, he's in town. I just want to have him up here, bro. So I'm glad you're up here, man.
Thank you. That's what's up. But shout out to my friend Whitney who came to hang out with us.
Okay. Oh, Whitney, yes. Whitney.
Hey,
you know,
Whitney.
Because she didn't have headphones. She didn't have a mic. But Whitney's out here. Whitney, you good? We can hear you.
Yeah, we can.
Okay. Good. Equipment. All right. So until next week, man, we're going to take you out of here with another one from Jake and Papa. Go listen to their new track. It is on thisisrnb.com. Check it out.
Beat in the trunk.
But for now, Starless. And that's